Welcome back everyone to another week at the Damage Report. Also welcome me back to the Damage Report, please. No, Brooke is here.
Just kidding. Yes, very happy that you're back.
I'm less happy than I was.
We have been talking about you being gone and how sad it was, how upsetting it was, how we are so grateful.
Well, I wanted to say how grateful I was that you and Anna and Ida and Brett and JR held down the fort throughout the week.
Yeah, it was fun.
And did a lot of great shows. The reviews have been fabulous.
Yeah.
As Trump would say, great ratings. Highest ratings, so things are gonna go downhill now that I'm back. But I like to eat and live places, so I'm gonna keep going. But anyway, it was a rough weekend, obviously.
I'm gonna be honest, I've been telling everybody that you were at a board game convention playing things like Candyland and Yahtzee and Monopoly. So tell us, how was it?
I was at a board game convention. We weren't playing those things.
Did you win
though.
Chutes and Ladder this time?
Or? I would play it, but so I'm not going to. I want to now make this entire show about board games. I'm not gonna do that. I'm just going to say that if the extent of your knowledge about board games is at Sorry and Trouble and things like that, you should understand that every year literally thousands of awesome board games are made that come from a variety of different genres and can facilitate awesome conversation and fun experiences with your friends actually around a table and not just on your phone. And board games are waiting for you to discover. They are awesome and they're not what you remember playing growing up.
Life, did you play Life?
No, I did not play Life.
Okay, okay, glad to have you back.
You messed up because now I'm gonna go through a breakdown. Okay, so first of all, Libertalia. It's an interesting game where you draft, I could do it, but I'm not going to do it, especially considering how rough the news was throughout the week.
True.
So you could expect that throughout today's show, we're gonna talk a lot in depth about the two different mass shootings that our country experienced over the past 48 hours. We're gonna give you the details on it. We're gonna go through Trump's response. We have the president of Media Matters gonna be joining us in just a little bit to break down Fox News and white supremacy. And so all of that tied together. A little bit later on, we are gonna talk a little bit more about last week's debates because I wasn't here to actually give my thoughts. We have a guest who's gonna be joining us there. And then what is political extremism and what will the media actually label as politically extreme? Awesome study done actually by Media Matters. And you're gonna see quickly that there is a bit of a slant there in which side of the spectrum gets labeled extreme and which does not. But before we get to all that, we are gonna start off with the big stories from the weekend, and that is obviously the two mass shootings. Over the course of this weekend, our country was, of course, struck by multiple mass shootings. We are a country that's grown very accustomed to mass shootings, but this stood out. And we had two, one in El Paso and one in Dayton, Ohio. The death toll in both, extremely tragic and rising. Police say that one suspect is in custody after a mass shooting inside a Walmart in El Paso, Texas on Saturday that left there, it says 21. That was updated as of this morning. We now, we've received word that it is up to 22 people were killed, at least 26 wounded in that one attack. And as I said a minute ago, it takes a lot at this point for mass shootings to sort of break through how desensitized we've become, but this one sure does. And it was joined very soon after by another attack in Dayton, Ohio, where 9 people were killed, at least 27 wounded. The shooter was killed on the scene. The shooter in the El Paso attack was taken into custody. This one in Dayton, Ohio was wearing body armor and using a 223 caliber high capacity magazine and had additional magazines with him. He was wearing body armor, so you can probably guess what sort of terror attack this was. Right. And so that's how we closed out the weekend, was two horrific attacks. We're gonna give you details on what we know about the attackers, what brand of terrorism this actually was. But I was out of state, I was busy with work that I was doing. You were following this in real time. How did you feel throughout this weekend as more and more details came out?
Yeah, I mean, the same as you always feel, horrible. Worried if this is gonna be what makes something finally happen. Frustrated seeing all of the people who actually have the power to do something about this, saying they're praying, saying their hearts are going out to these people. Yeah, it's horrifying. Over and over, people shouldn't have to deal with this type of trauma, let alone the fact that people shouldn't have to die at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about those parents and how people were doing back to school shopping, and you think about how often you've been in that exact same position, how you have to go to the grocery store later in the day. The same.
Yeah.
Because this happened, what, 2 days before and 2 days before that, you feel the same, as upset as you always are. And then this one also was, the death toll kept rising, even up until this morning. And I think on Twitter, there was a woman who was looking for her little brother and Unfortunately, they found out that he passed away. He was shot and killed in this, and it's horrible. And then also you find out details about the shooter and you are not surprised.
Yeah, exactly. And we're gonna talk about some of the attempted obvious explanations that we always hear after something like this happens. Yeah, it was devastating though that the death toll kept rising. I listened to a podcast this morning where they talked about a mother who had shielded her infant. She was alive when the podcast came out and had died earlier this morning. I believe she was the 21st victim. On the thoughts and prayers, we're not gonna go super in depth because you've heard us talk about it a million times. I understand that people here who are not believers often feel very pandered to when politicians have nothing but thoughts and prayers. It's past that now. If you are a believer, you should feel incredibly pandered to, because the thing about their thoughts and prayers are that obviously they're not going to help us, but also they're not doing the prayers. Marco Rubio's not on his knees next to his bed every night when there's a mass shooting. It is nothing more than a tweet at this point. And so whether you believe in some higher power or not, they're spitting in your face every time. That's what they give you and nothing else. But let's talk about two of the shooters. So first in Ohio. High school classmates of the gunman who killed 9 people early Sunday in Dayton say he was suspended earlier for compiling a hit list of those he wanted to kill and a rape list of girls he wanted to sexually assault. So we don't know as much about this shooter yet, and we're of course waiting for more information. But this is a person who obviously had, there had been alarms raised about this individual. He was already apparently an incredibly prospectively violent person, both traditional violence and sexual violence there. And so this brings up the sort of thing where they always say like, it's just mental health, and we're gonna talk more about that. But they never really say, what are you gonna do? So this guy raised all sorts of alarms. So then what? What do you do? Do you want him to be confined? Trump sort of implied that, we're gonna talk about that. Do you want him to be banned from owning guns? No, that's a step too far for most politicians, even if there are obvious signs that violence could be coming. And so it's not, like saying it's mental health is not just an evasion from talking about guns and things like that, but it's a particularly empty and shallow evasion because they never go the step farther to say what we should actually do to deal with it.
And you know, and I feel bad because lots of people have mental health care issues. Lots of people are struggling with their own mental health. Lots of people are seeking help and treatment for their own, for the well-being of their own mental health. And they don't all go out, get guns and murder people.
Yeah.
So it's offensive to those people to all automatically just jump to that. And then also this country doesn't seem to care about people's mental health. How often do we see in budgets where mental health is, you know, at the bottom and it gets cut? I just read this big piece about Chicago, and it was an older piece, but about how in the city of Chicago, how the budget, the state's budget, like disproportionately hurt mental health care facilities. So do we care or do we not care? And also, it is unfair and frustrating that all of a sudden, before we know anything, that, you know, white shooters get labeled as, you know, they have mental health issues. When we talk about what happens in the South Side of Chicago as if it's a war zone and it's scary, nobody brings up the fact, nobody brings up mental health when you're talking about little black boys. Nobody brings up mental health when you're talking about black people who are committing crimes. Nobody does, let alone the fact that the trauma and the PTSD of living in that space, you would think it would be an automatic, like, oh, there's gonna be some mental health issues going around. But no, it's like, oh, monsters, criminals. This guy maybe played too many video games and it messed with him a little too much. And I think that we should always care when someone has mental health care issues and different needs. But that shouldn't be what we jump to when all of a sudden we find out a white person went and shot up a place. Because as you were saying before the show, at any point when anybody takes a gun and kills multiple people, of course, that's everybody. Like everybody gets mad, everybody gets frustrated, but everybody doesn't kill. So yeah, something's not well if you are killing people in every instance.
Yeah, it's not an explanation.
It's
a note to make, and then you actually try to explain it. And all of the politicians who constantly say, these white shooters are crazy and don't talk about it when it's a Muslim shooter, do they think that these people are perfectly sane? Do they think that they're rational? Is that really what they're implying? And maybe I'm crazy. I think Muslim people play video games too, and yet I've never heard that used as an explanation.
As an excuse,
yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I never hear about. Anyway, And especially don't go to the insanity thing, the mental health thing, if you're also gonna do this. I'm gonna jump ahead one graphic. You might remember this because we talked about it multiple times. It was relatively early on in Donald Trump's presidency. Trump signs bill revoking Obama era gun checks for people with mental illnesses. So if he actually genuinely believes that this is an issue of mental illness, then what the hell is that and how is that not impeachable? He's saying it's just mental illness and I want those people to be armed to the gills.
And there was something else that we were talking about before the show, Columbine, which was not the beginning of mass shootings in this country, of course not. But it was, I think, the beginning for a lot of us, for people our age, absolutely. It was like there was a new fear that didn't exist for me. I didn't have the education, I didn't have the knowledge. It was absolutely a new fear for me as someone who was still in school. And the narrative after that was largely that these kids were bullied, that they had mental health issues, and it was largely ignored. That you know they did this on purpose on Hitler's birthday. Mm-hmm. That they drew swastikas and things about natural selection in their journals, and that they were white supremacists. And if that was part of the conversation way back then when we started talking about this, because it matches a lot of these shootings.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would we be where we are now? Probably, yeah. But.
Well, at least one of these shooters certainly seems to have also been a white supremacist. And we're going to talk about that with our guest in just a second. Okay. So stick around.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're still learning more about the motivations of the two mass shooters from this weekend, but for one, the El Paso shooter, it is fairly clear that he was motivated by racist and white supremacist ideology. There was a, people say, manifesto released online, I would say racist rantings. But in any event, assuming that this is authentic and it is believed to have come from the El Paso shooter, let's talk a little bit about what was included in there. It declares that the imminent attack is a response to the Hispanic invasion, accuses Democrats of pandering to the Hispanic voting bloc, rails against traitors, condemns race mixing and interracial unions, and says yet another reason to send them back. And many people have been responding to this rhetoric, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who says using the words invasion, infestation with respect to a specific targeted group of people, implying they're vermin, this is the language of white supremacy, and it goes all the way to the top. It's not a matter of political stances. This is stoking hatred and endangering the country. And that exact sort of language has become very common for certain Republican politicians, but has also been a big part of Fox News's talk about immigration recently. And that is why we're joined now to break down this issue by Angelo Carasone, president of Media Matters for America. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. So I know you've been talking a lot about this recently, and your organization, Media Matters, has been doing in-depth coverage of this sort of talk, especially on Fox News, for literally years at this point. And so when you saw the initial details from this manifesto, were you really shocked that that sort of language popped up again?
No, I think because, you know, there's a pretty strong pipeline. You know, the last time I was on your show, you know, one of the things that, and this was years ago, we talked about that there was a direct line, and we were tracing it even then, which is a couple of years back now, of, you know, from 4chan and 8chan, a direct line from those communities right into Donald Trump, and then what his political campaign was using in terms of messaging and communicating back to its audience. And we see the same thing happening here, where Fox News has really picked up the mantle of the great replacement theory, as well as this idea, and really hyping it aggressively, this idea that we are being invaded. And they've been very intentionally using that terminology over the past year or so. And you know, what's interesting to me is that every time they use that term, they will say, and it is an invasion. You know, some people will say that it's not, but it absolutely is an invasion. And I think that they sort of recognize that it's kind of flimsy, but they're trying to persuade and really hammer it to their own audience, which is not the 8chan audience, although there's an overlap, that this is the right way to describe it and that most people really should be calling it that.
There are obviously any number of examples we could give of this particular thing. I'm not going to go through a bunch, but I want to show one short video clip, I believe from less than 1 month ago. This is Laura Ingraham and Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, and this shows the connection between the right-wing media and the politicians, as you'll see.
Dan, your state has been completely overrun by this illegal invasion. I think calling anything but an invasion at this point is just not being honest with people. So what would you say to Governor Newsom tonight, given, you know, it's a done deal, the ink is dry?
I guess he's going to change their state motto to illegal immigrants first and Americans last.
So there, we have a politician, we have the media, it's overrun, it's an invasion. That's just being honest. I guess that guy's manifesto was just being honest. And that's they're right. Being put before actual Texas citizens, I guess.
That's right, and that's a perfect illustration of the exact same feedback loop that we see in action between the Trump campaign. You know, the interesting thing is that you have these conspiracy theories and these notions, especially the bigotry fueling this idea of a secret invasion, that it's a replacement theory, which is that, you know, one of the things that's kind of missed in all of this is the deep anti-Semitism that underlies this. Mm-hmm. Because at the same time that the major focus is on hatred and bigotry toward, in this case, you know, Latinos, a part of the other of the theory that's underneath that is that Jewish people are the ones that are funding this invasion in order to take away power from white people. This is the narrative that Fox News is promoting on a regular basis. And it's so frequent, as you saw illustrated right there in that clip where Laura Ingraham was trying to make sure that Dan Patrick was using that terminology, although that didn't take much persuasion, is that this, you know, the clip that you played in the beginning where you quoted Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she was quoting a Media Matters researcher that looked back at and found that the Trump campaign is running more than 2,000 advertisements using the language of invasion. And so it's this feedback loop. You go from these extremist communities, it reaches a much larger and wider audience through Fox News, and they really make sure that it's not just palatable to a larger audience, but that others are getting in line, including elected officials. So that becomes a normative language, and then you can now advertise back to them and really reinforce that and recruit new people.
So both you and, you know, the other researchers at Media Matters, you watch a lot more Fox News than I do. And I'm sure you can find this sort of language across a lot of their programming, but it seems to me like Laura Ingraham, as we showed, and Tucker Carlson are perhaps two of the worst. As I was skimming a bit of the manifesto, it kind of seemed like if I were to put that into his teleprompter and he were to just read it, I don't know if the audience would actually notice the difference. Is that an unfair characterization?
Seriously, what you just said is totally correct. You could take the manifesto and actually have him read that. And for the by and large, his audience would not think there's anything out of the ordinary with Tucker Carlson. In fact, they would be happy to some extent because they would feel that he's dropping some of the politeness and courtesies that he may extend in some situations.
Just being honest, as Laura Ingraham said.
That's exactly right.
So I'm curious, have you, in your research, have you come across, like if this is the language that they're going to use and we notice the connection between it and these mass shooters, how do other media outlets, how do Democratic politicians actually respond? What do we do about this?
So one, they tend not to, you know, one thing that I think, you know, the reason that I work at Media Matters and I care about the media is that no matter what the issue is, the media is the issue, right? How they frame it, how they talk about it is going to shape the debate or shape the outcome. And so to your question, one thing that consistently happens across the board is, you know, and I'm not trying to give any Democrats a pass here, but one thing that takes place is even other outlets frame this or have been framing this in ways where they've actively gone out of their way to avoid calling these things what they are, right? They'll say racially divisive instead of racist. Mm-hmm. For example, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you're a guest on a show, you know, it's hard every segment to immediately begin by correcting the host that you're with. But well, actually, you know, it's super. Now they should be. And I think a big part of one of the things we see is that there's not a lot of clarity in the language across the board from Democratic elected leaders, or there hadn't been. And to separately, that I don't think that they've been elevating this in the way that it is. I mean, we've seen a pretty steady increase in right-wing violence, right-wing threats, and warnings about this dating all the way back to the end of the Bush administration, where the signature report from the Department of Homeland Security was that the major threat facing us was going to be right-wing threat. And I just, it really hasn't been given the kind of attention that it's warranted across the board. I think the media is a big part of that because they set the parameters of the debate. On the other hand, there have been some candidates and some politicians that are starting to use the language much more clearly, especially in recent months, where they've been saying, look, white supremacy is a problem. That is a new feature that I really want to emphasize for many, is that it hasn't actually been something that we've heard, you know, 2 years ago, that was not something that we heard across the board. And I think it's a combination of a lot of new elected energy that are willing to speak truth to power. And sort of, you know, it's hard to kind of ignore the thing that's right in front of your face.
Well, Angela, we always appreciate you joining us on the show and breaking out this material. But in a broader sense, there's nobody like Media Matters that is doing the work to catalog the connection of this sort of rhetoric to Fox News and the politicians. Like, people hopefully will listen and act on it. But now we always can look back and we can see all of the examples. And so you guys are doing sort of indispensable work in that area. So thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, though, Donald Trump has responded to the shootings from the weekend. We're going to break down what he said after this. So there you have people at a vigil after the mass shootings of this weekend asking for the extremely reasonable thing to be done in Texas, which is literally anything, just do something. And so now we're left wondering across this country, since that wasn't the only mass shooting, will anyone do something? And so we turn to Donald Trump, the guy that we as a country have chosen to give the most political power of anyone in the world, as bizarre as that sounds. So Donald Trump, is he gonna do something? So he did address the shootings. We're going to show you video of that. Before we get to that video, I want to take you back just a little bit ago, something like a month or two ago, when this sort of topic about what he's going to do, not about shootings, but about immigration came up. And I want you to see his response.
I mean, when you have 15,000 people marching up and you have hundreds and hundreds of people and you have two or three border security people that are brave and great. And don't forget, we don't let them and we can't let them use weapons. We can't. Other countries do. We can't. I would never do that. But how do you stop these people? You can't. There's no. That's only in the panhandle you can get away with that statement. Only in the panhandle. So it's a tough situation. But if they change the loopholes, we'll have it perfectly. And when the wall is finished, it's going to be great.
Trump is wrong there. It's not only in the panhandle. You can say that sort of thing at his rallies anywhere in the country that he chooses to hold them. So someone yelled out that we should gun down immigrants, and he smiled and he joked about it rather than having security take that psychopath out of the audience.
Right. He made a joke about it. Only in the panhandle. And then what was also so frustrating is the people behind him. There were a couple people who kind of had like uncomfortable looks on their faces. And
good.
I know, I don't even know if half those people are actors and actresses. I don't know. But the people were smiling and clapping and they thought that was funny and not horrifying. And that's the problem, because far too often we find somebody do something brutal and violent and murderous. And it was someone who also liked those words.
Exactly, yeah. So we don't know what Trump is gonna do necessarily, but we know that some of his followers wanna do something. And the thing that he was laughing about a couple months ago, they chose to do to stop this tide of people coming across the border that he's been so scared about because of rallies like Donald Trump. So let's turn now to what Trump said earlier today. We've got a couple of video clips for you. Here, he actually shockingly acknowledges that white supremacy is an issue.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. These sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America. Hatred warps the mind, ravages the heart, and devours the soul.
So I'm glad that the president read from the teleprompter the stuff that he definitely did not write himself, but for somehow, for once, the stuff that was written for him to say was actually right.
Yeah, but the
problem
with that
is anything else he's done, but
right, is that he's not acknowledging that his prior words are hate. Mm-hmm. They just spew hate, and that's all he's been doing, and that we still haven't been able to agree on the fact that what he says is obviously full of hate and racism and xenophobia. That's what he says. And so in one conversation, he says all of these anti-immigrant things, all of these anti-black and brown people things, essentially. And then on the other hand, he says hate is bad. And he's able to do that because he's disagreeing in a lot of his, a lot of the Republican senators, except for the one black senator and the one Republican senator and the one black Republican congressman. Mm-hmm. Those were like the only two who were like largely like,
pushback.
This is bad. This is racist. Yeah. And everyone else was like, this is not racist. He's not racist. And so, yeah, so then he can just start from anew and say, this is hateful, because there he has some total different definition of what hate and racism and xenophobia is, mm-hmm, that I, as a black woman, don't have. I don't understand that. I don't know what it is. I don't know what level of racism it has to be for the president and his followers to deem it racist.
Well, I think we do know. It has to be at least 20 people shot in one attack, and the person had to have put up a manifesto that made it abundantly clear and undeniable that it was inspired by anti-immigrant xenophobia. That is literally the bar. Anything below that
is not going to qualify. But the stuff that he was inspired by is the stuff that just word for word comes out of the president's mouth.
And
so in one hand, he's saying this is not racist.
Yeah, so this is better than the fine people on both sides, but worse than having literally any other president. And so he continued on and is going to acknowledge the link between this sort of rhetoric, not with his own administration, but with some of the darkest corners of the internet.
We must shine light on the dark recesses of the internet and stop mass murders before they start. I'm also directing the Department of Justice to propose legislation ensuring that those who commit hate crimes and mass murders face the death penalty, and that this capital punishment be delivered quickly, decisively, and without years of needless delay.
Okay, so the issue with the darkest corners of the internet is that they like one thing above all others, and that's Hitler. Number two is Trump, okay? They love Trump in those dark corners of the internet. So I don't trust him at all that he really cares about what's going on there. That's where his online base of supporters coming from. Now, when he turns to the hate crimes and the death penalty, the only reason we're talking about that is because this is a really interesting wedge issue moment for Republicans, because they don't want to acknowledge that hate crimes exist or even a thing, but they really want to execute more people. And so he's putting them in a bind there.
And I know that I have much different views on the death penalty than a lot of other people. I get that. But our justice system is just not strong enough to ever have something like the death penalty. We just get it wrong way too often. And so to have the president of the United States, it just, of course you want someone who shoots and kills 20 people. Of course you want someone, you know, punished. Of course you want to see them behind bars and not able to do that again. But I also, on the whole other hand, I don't like the president of the United States using the same wording essentially that he used against the Central Park Five and his $80,000 ad.
Yeah.
Against, you know, four, five black kids. Talking about it on national television, just that same, there is something skeevy about that to me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't want anyone in the federal government deciding who lives and who dies, least of all Donald Trump, honestly. Right. And so let's go to one more video, because those comments, the first one at least, where he acknowledged that white supremacy is a hateful ideology, were good. But if you really want to get an idea of how much he actually cares about the speech that he's giving, how much he cares about the shootings from this weekend, this last video is really going to explain things to you.
May God bless the memory of those who perished in Toledo.
God. It obviously
wasn't in Toledo. It was not in Toledo. And I mean, it's one thing, I guess, a slip of the tongue. I would have a problem if the president, speaking off the cuff, got the city of a very recent mass shooting wrong. And I understand Joe Biden did. He was speaking about it off the cuff and he got it wrong. Shouldn't have. Makes me question things. But he was not talking off the cuff. He was reading prepared remarks loaded into a teleprompter and he got it wrong. So He didn't care enough to, in the moment, know that it was wrong. The person who wrote it didn't care, and we know why. Because Donald Trump did not spend this weekend huddled with advisors about what to do about gun violence in America. He crashed a wedding. He went golfing. He had fun. This weekend, I was at a board game convention, and I had a less relaxing time than Donald Trump did while as president during two mass shootings. And that's why he doesn't care. Two tips for analyzing Donald Trump's speeches in the future. When he's lying, people call him sir in little quotes that he says. And when he doesn't give a damn, he sniffs constantly and his mouth dries out. You can count on that every single time. And man, that guy was sniffing throughout these comments.
It's just the optics of that. I get it that everyone doesn't, you don't have to sit around and mope after something tragic happens, that you still have to go on with your lives. I saw a guy who actually was in Walmart during the shooting, who then had to go to Sam's Club because he still needed food in the house.
Yeah.
So I get it. Your life has to move on. But as the president of the United States, just the optics of just like out of respect, I'm not going to be photographed at a wedding. I'm not saying go get in the bed.
Yeah.
Of course, like he's allowed to, you know, eat and spend time with his family. But like playing golf and
just having
going,
a good old time.
Popping up at a wedding and having fun and being photographed in that space, it was too soon for that. And it's hurtful to a lot of people because just there was a lack of respect there.
Yeah, 100%. And just super fast, I just want to touch on a couple of his tweets. He said today, the media has a big responsibility to life and safety in our country. So it's the fake news that caused this attack, not the politicians and right-wing media figures who are using the literal same language as the guy who wrote the manifesto. And you can see online people comparing direct statements from Donald Trump and sections of the manifesto. So it's us, we're responsible. So just bear that in mind. And then also he tweeted this, and this is truly insane. We cannot let those killed in El Paso, Texas and Dayton, Ohio, oh look, he knows now, die in vain. No matter what, they have died unnecessarily. The idea that we can somehow make it not in vain by following your political agenda is incredibly offensive. But he says we can never forget them and those many who came before them. Republicans and Democrats must come together and get strong background checks, perhaps marrying this legislation with desperately needed immigration reform. So if anybody tells you not to politicize this event, understand that the precedent has been set by the most powerful person in our political system. And also, a crazy anti-immigrant extremist wanted to kill as many Mexicans as possible. So he murdered 20 people. And coming out of it, the president says, we need stronger immigration laws.
Wait, that
sounds
so
like
awful.
The shooter wrote the tweet.
Oh my goodness.
Like we're gonna follow a terrorist agenda after he killed 20 people. But that's what we get from President Donald Trump.
That's frustrating. That's harmful. That's awful. That is awful.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with the need for immigration reform.
Yeah.
And also using asylum seekers, it's not the same as people immigrating to the US. It's different. Also, yeah. I hate that this immigration reform, it's just a euphemism for we gotta keep these Mexicans out of here.
Yeah.
I'm over it. What do you mean by, break down what you mean by immigration reform? Because nine times out of 10, it is something awful.
Yeah.
And I'm tired of that. I am tired of conflating asylum seekers, people who are fearing for their lives. And this is all, I cannot believe he tweeted that, but I can, but it's still shocking every time. It's still, I did not know it was gonna be this bad.
I agree. Okay, we do have to shake a short break though. When we come back, we're gonna touch on last week's debates after this. So last week we had two nights of the second round of the Democratic debates, and hopefully you were able to catch some of the live TYT response to it right after the debates last week, as well as my own commentary coming from Detroit, where we were covering the debates and also held another one of our revolution rallies where hundreds of awesome activists, fans and concerned citizens came together to put pressure on the candidates to take the right positions. You probably noticed that some topics got a lot of coverage, others not so much, and we had sort of predicted in advance that would be the case. Returning to the show to respond to those debates, we now have American author and activist Adam Eichen. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me again.
Glad to have you here. So we talked just a couple of weeks ago, and we were concerned that there would not be enough attention on a lot of issues, but one of them was the state of our democracy. It did come up once or twice. How would you say you felt about the amount of attention paid to protecting and reviving our democracy?
I mean, except for a couple unprompted references by the candidates, it was barely brought up at all. In fact, there wasn't a single question about our democracy that's currently in crisis, which is especially egregious in a place like Michigan, which is one of the most gerrymandered states in the nation, and also simultaneously a state where there is a nonpartisan movement that won gerrymandering reform in 2018 via ballot initiative, including another ballot initiative that expanded the right to vote. This would have been the perfect opportunity to discuss both the crisis that our democracy is in, as well as the nascent and growing movement to reform our democracy. But the moderators once again chose to ignore that. And as journalist Dave Daly pointed out in a column in Salon the morning after the first night, it's been 24 since Shelby County, when the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013, there have been 24 Democratic debates. Three general debates and forums, and three general election debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Not a single one has asked about voting rights. That's egregious. It's journalistic malpractice.
And there were a lot of other instances of that on those two nights, I can say that. In particular, the Electoral College, I know it's a big focus of your research. If I recall correctly, it was brought up in an aside by one of the candidates, but I don't recall any comments about actual possible reform of the Electoral College. Is that right?
Right. I mean, there are a lot of these issues that candidates will give lip service to, but really not go into the policy details about how to get it done. Most people assume, for example, that the Electoral College, you would need a constitutional amendment. But an article I recently wrote for the New Republic showed that's not the case, that there is a growing movement right now to pass something called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, where states would enter into this compact and pledge to award their electoral votes to the winner of the popular vote. And it would only go into effect when the states comprising a majority of electoral votes, i.e. 270, are already in the pact. And right now we're at 196 states, and there's a clear pathway to getting it done by 2024. But no one is talking about that. This is a perfect opportunity for candidates to use their bully pulpits to talk about these novel reform ideas. But instead, they bring it up unprompted and barely give any lip service to it. Elizabeth Warren did give some credit to the Electoral College back in, I think, March or April. Bernie Sanders recently tweeted out that we should abolish the Electoral College. So there is some, you know, a good discussion happening off the debate stage. But it would be really great to see this, on a national platform where millions of people are watching. Like, that is what our democracy needs right now, is a robust discussion about how to fix it.
And look, I would hope that in the next round of debates that it would be brought up. But as you pointed out, we don't have a lot of historical reasons to think that that will be the case. As a potential alternative, we know that recently public pressure to have sort of topical issue-based forums has been working. I don't remember if it was CNN or MSNBC, but they're going to have a climate-focused one. And I think there's at least one other topical forum that's going to happen. Do you think that there's any chance, should people be pushing for a forum or a town hall focusing on democracy and voting rights?
Yes, absolutely. The debate moderators have proven that they have no interest in talking about these issues that aren't just, you know, irrelevant or that Americans don't think about. That poll after poll shows that systemic corruption, our broken democracy, is one of the top issues that voters care about. I mean, heck, Donald Trump ran on draining the swamp. Mm-hmm. I would argue that's a really central reason that his campaign caught steam towards the end, is that that was a very salient issue for many Americans who just felt alienated from the political system. So if Democrats want to win in the general, they have to start talking about these issues.
Yeah.
And so if I were a member of the DNC, I would certainly be pushing internally to have this, because Democrats have to be ready to go up on the debate stage in front of Donald Trump and explain, you failed to drain the swamp. Here's my plan to actually get it done. Exactly. And that's going to be a potent message going into the general election.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope that we can have you back on soon to talk about the awesome conversations spurred at debates about democracy by more responsible moderators in the future. That might not happen, but let's keep up the conversation. Thank you, Adam, for joining us. Your recent book is Daring Democracy, Igniting Power, Meaning, and Connection for the America We Want. And we always appreciate your contribution.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're gonna take a short break here. We come back. What is politically extreme according to the mainstream media? We'll break it down after this. There are a lot of reforms that I would like to see coming out of this weekend's shootings, in particular the racist shooting in El Paso. But I'm gonna set the bar really, really low. I'm gonna set it below everybody should stop using the language of invasion, because I know that that's not going to happen. I'm gonna target it at one person, and that is Tommy Lahren. The reason I'm choosing with her is that she wants you to believe that her brand is that she's not the same as those other right-wing commentators. She can evolve, she can be a little different, like on abortion, for instance. And so I am gonna send this message directly to Tommy Lahren. You have used the language of invasion. Now terrorists, multiple terrorists, are using that same language. So I am asking you to no longer do that. Now, in case you haven't seen her prior uses of this, let's take a look at this video.
You know, this isn't just a migrant caravan, this is an invasion. And every American watching what's going on should be infuriated, because what it looks like there is soon gonna be at our borders, something that we're gonna have to deal with as Americans.
Okay, so I am going to extend to you the goodwill to say that you just disagree with me on immigration. It's not founded in hatred or racism or anything like that. And so this can be, for you as the reasonable commentator, an opportunity to learn and grow. You use the language of invasion, not to inspire violence or anything like that. But now one guy went into a synagogue at the Tree of Life and shot up a bunch of people using the language of invasion online. Now you have another guy who went to a Walmart and shot up a bunch of people using the language of invasion. I want you to do just the tiniest bit of growth and stop using that language, knowing that it's a terrorist talking point. Is that a reasonable request?
I mean, how many days ago did she essentially call like a presidential candidate, a senator of the United States? I don't know which word I can use, but
Something like a slut, basically.
Yes.
Just a couple days ago.
Wait, so I don't know what we're doing here. She's not the one, because on a daily basis, I feel like she is fueled by the type of daily abuse that people who don't look like her receive from her followers because of the things that come out of her mouth.
Yeah.
It's horrifically racist. And now we've gotten to like sexism with her racism. And I mean, sure, I guess one can hope. I'll stand behind you.
Thank
I don't have
you.
Anything directly to say to her.
This probably is a futile effort, but I know that she believes that she is a genuine person.
Oh, why?
She must believe that.
She's making money.
She certainly, nobody thinks that they're a racist, you know, her or anyone else. And so you just need to understand, Tommy, that that language is being used by horrendously violent nihilistic people. And you do not want to be that person, I know. And so I'm just asking you, stop using language. And so if you're watching this and you're not Tommy Lahren, feel free to tweet this at Tommy Lahren. It's a pretty small ask. I think it's the least we can expect. Mm-hmm. So let's see if she'll give us what we deserve.
It's a lot to tell someone who is racist to stop being racist.
I'm but not if going that far. Try, I'm just saying, don't use one word that terrorists in our country are using on a constant basis.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah,
so
I support the message. Yeah, I support the message.
Okay, so why don't we turn now? We're gonna talk about another topic.
Okay.
We have just wanted people to be real about what we're experiencing across this country, and better or worse, for all the issues I have with him that I've made very clear on this show.
Uh-huh.
He was real in response to those shootings. Take a look at what he said.
Is there anything in your mind that the president can do now to make this any better?
What do you think? You know the he's been saying? He's been calling Mexican immigrants rapists and criminals. I don't know, like members of the press, what the hold on a second. You know, it's these questions that you know the answers to. I mean, connect the dots about what he's been doing in this country. He's not tolerating racism, he's promoting racism. He's not tolerating violence, he's inciting racism and violence in this country.
Okay, so super fast caveats, because people always think that if you say literally anything positive about a person, you are now their biggest fan in the world. Yesterday, I didn't support Beto O'Rourke for president. Today, after that, I don't support Beto O'Rourke for president. But I do like those comments there. What do you think about them?
I don't want to be cussed out by someone who shouldn't be running for president, who's running a vanity presidential campaign. I do think that the message that, hey, what you just asked me is inappropriate, just in asking it. I also don't want to be cussed out at work.
Yeah, I like to think that he's not cussing the individual person out.
When
he's frustrated
cuss
with
at
the media.
Them, right, no, he did cuss her out.
Yeah.
He was frustrated. He's not maybe not specifically angry at her, but he cussed her out.
Mm-hmm.
Like completely for sure.
Yeah, we don't have the video.
Lame.
We don't know if he was looking at her.
But I get it. I like the message. I also think that there are a lot of people who could be doing better in like as the media could be doing better. One who could run for the Senate again instead of running for president could be doing better.
That could be anybody.
Exactly. It could be anybody.
Yeah, the president.
Not talking
Republican
specifics.
Politicians
right.
could be better.
No, but yeah, absolutely. It's a problem.
Yeah.
It is a problem because when we, it's the same thing. When as the media as a whole doesn't completely be very clear, there is no center line. So when you don't call racism what it is, you are picking a side.
Yeah.
You're picking the side of the racist because you are, in essence, apologizing for them. You're softening it up. You're pushing the narrative that it is possible that it is not racist. And it allows, it keeps going. It allows people to be, you know, fully comfortable supporting someone who's racist. And a lot of those people are racist because it's hard to be supportive of somebody who's racist without feeling and liking that stuff yourself. You should be horrified by this. But that's what it is. It allows a bunch of senators, a bunch of Congress members to not, like they don't have to like hide, you know, the umbrella of racism is not of them because they don't believe it and the media doesn't believe it and the media doesn't call it what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I like the message, I do. I feel bad that I spent so much time, I was a little, as someone who's been out there and reporting and who wants to call it racism, I don't wanna be cussed out at work.
Yeah.
But
I will try to stop.
I like the message.
I see what you're saying. All I wanna say, I like to think, and maybe I'm being naive, that he feels some of the frustration with how ridiculous the mental gymnastics of the media. And like, I want you to say that it's racist because I'll get fired if I do. I'm sick of that, and I'm sick of that being the way we operate.
I agree.
I know that a lot of people, you know, who like me, don't support Beto, or like, this is just an attempt to revive his campaign. I guess I got news for you. Literally everything everybody says is an attempt to make their campaign better. Who cares?
And
we want them to say the right things.
Like, we were frustrated and saddened by this, and we live in Los Angeles. This is in his backyard,
exactly.
At a Walmart that he's probably been to.
He's more frustrated than us.
Of course, I believe him. I believe that he's sad about this. I believe that these are true, honest things coming out of his mouth, and it's not just about his presidential campaign. This happened in his city, in a city that he loves.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's unfair.
Yeah, great comments by Beto O'Rourke, but you should probably drop out anyway. It's just not your time, man. It's just not. And that's not hate or anything. It's just not your time. But that was a great comment.
You could
but it's not your time.
Do so much more.
Yes. And when we say that, by the way, I know there are a lot of other awesome people who are running in the primary for the Democratic Senate race. We're not, you know, saying that if we say that Beto should drop out, it's not because we necessarily want him to be the nominee or whatever. Lots of caveats all over the place. Anyway, good comment by Beto O'Rourke. And also, it's not your time. Okay. Thank you, everybody. The mainstream media is still very much the gatekeeper of our political system in a few different ways. They're the gatekeeper of who actually gets to present political ideas. They tend to bring on certain sorts of people and not others. But they're also gatekeepers of perception of political ideas. For instance, what policies are extreme and what aren't? I think you know where this is going, but Media Matters actually did an analysis of which ideas, thoughts, people, and parties are presented as politically extreme, and take a look at what they found. So over a 4-week period, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News discussed extremism on the left or right a total of 547 times. 86% of those instances framed the American political left as extreme. And I took a look at it, and it turns out that that's not actually even. That's very uneven. That they were far more ready to present an idea coming from the left as extreme. And now let's show how that happens. Look, Fox is the worst at this, obviously, but bring up this chart, and you're gonna see that while Fox presented 270 left things as extreme and just 26 as right, CNN and MSNBC were pretty god awful in this respect as well. So it cuts across the so-called ideological divide of the mainstream media.
Yeah, it's shocker. And there was also something in this piece that I thought was interesting that, well, I mean, but it is kind of like a duh, but that this does nothing but just push the right-wing talking point that Democrats are crazy, that they're extremists, that they are this and that. And that's disheartening because of what we're seeing, the violence that we are seeing. Mm-hmm. So often coming from people who are very clearly just like Trump supporters.
Yeah.
And they say that and they're proud of that. And I'm not saying being a Trump supporter makes you a murderer.
I'm not saying that either.
I'm not saying that. I don't want to see that in the comments. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah. So look, let's bring up that last chart just for 1 second before we move on. And so you see those three different, I got the right direction on the first try. So I just want you to bear that in mind the next time you hear about a liberal press, a left-wing press, how MSNBC are their big libs and everything. If they are, they're not showing it, okay? Because they are apparently there to present left-wing ideas as out of the mainstream, even though, and we're not gonna go through all the polls, you know that the policies pushed by the left are generally more commonly supported by regular people. But those numbers, I don't think tell the whole story. Obviously, there's a disparity, they reveal that. But I want you to get an idea of how widespread this disparity is. So take a look at the sorts of things that were declared to be extreme during this analysis. Oftentimes, it was applied to the Democratic Party as a whole, or to the 2020 Democratic candidates, particularly Senator Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, or a juxtaposition to former Vice President Joe Biden. Networks also applied it to House Democrats, including members of the Squad and Nancy Pelosi. So either her enemies or her, both, they're both extreme. Future Supreme Court nominees, Democratic voters, party activists, Antifa, Warren's economic plans, economic policies in general, student debt forgiveness plans, healthcare plans, pro-choice policies, immigration policies, tax plans, identity politics, Google filters, legal challenges against President Donald Trump's administration, the Green New Deal, and the Networks Nation political conference. So literally everything up to and including what you had for breakfast has been declared a left-wing extremist plot to destroy traditional America. And again, it's not just Breitbart and 4chan that are doing this. Hell, it's not even just Fox News and Republican politicians. CNN and MSNBC and the people they choose to bring on their air are brought there to say that the things coming from the left, the ideas, the people, the policies, the plans, all of it is too extreme. And while that doesn't do the job necessarily of turning people against those policies, it makes it more difficult to rally even more support for these policies.
It's an overcorrection. It's this idea that you've got to have something from both sides, that you've got to be fair. Mm-hmm. And even though what it ends up doing is that conflating Medicare for all with outright racism, like, okay, see, the left does it too. They want to give everybody health care and it's going to cost a lot.
Yeah.
Sure, the right is supporting keeping babies in cages. But the left does it too. It's this overcorrection. And what happens is what's on the right is become normalized because this is America.
Yeah.
And even though we don't acknowledge it, a lot of that behavior is what makes America go.
Yeah.
It's an overcorrection, if that makes sense. I think so.
They've been called libs, and so they decide, you know what, we're gonna prove that we're not. Mm-hmm. You know, we're gonna chant build the wall.
Yeah.
And the issue, obviously, it's who they choose to bring on. It's not just the hosts. Most of those hosts don't know enough about politics to actually talk about it. But they bring on people who present the Democrats and the left as extreme. Now, thankfully, CNN, we were just talking about this, recently brought on Alexandra Rojas, executive director of the Justice Democrats, as a contributor. So she's gonna be presenting a counter argument. I wanna give Chris Cuomo credit for bringing both Cenk and Anna on from the main show. I might be appearing on that show recently as well. But that is just a tiny little pushback against the extreme positions that we see presented on mainstream media. Thank you as always.
Yeah,
for both today
for
and
me.
Last week. Thank you everybody who's been watching. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.